Well, the House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly this week to move towards banning TikTok, a move that would eventually ban TikTok in the United States. The argument, they say, is that it's a Chinese spy weapon, of course, designed to spy on Americans. They're very concerned about you being spied on. Okay, something doesn't really add up here. One of the loudest outspoken critics of this bill is Congressman Thomas Massie, who joins us now. Congressman, great to have you here on the show.
Hey, Clayton, thanks for having me on to talk about this.
My pleasure, because something just doesn't add up here. Because I have to say, Congress never moves this quickly on anything, and yet here we are. This bill flies out of committee over unanimously, by the way, then is passed overwhelmingly very, very quickly in the House of Representatives. So what is really going on here?
Oh, well, first of all, you know, they were already forced to move their data servers to the United States. So TikTok is hosted, I believe, by Oracle in the United States. And that's more than we can probably say for the social media companies that are domestic. I mean, they may have some of their data hosted overseas. I don't know where it's at. But TikTok did comply with that. I think it's really about inconvenient facts that are showing up on TikTok, and the government can't control the algorithm. They can't give one example of where somebody in the United States was spied on and then some action was taken against that person because of something they revealed on TikTok. I think it's more about the message that people, you know, can get from TikTok. It's also Pandora's box here. It gives the president way too much discretion to shut down not just apps, but websites. Like, why did they have to list websites in here? And his discretion, he has three ways he can declare one of these apps or websites to be bannable or banned by him. He can either acknowledge that they are domiciled overseas in a foreign adversary country. By the way, he gets to designate who the foreign adversary countries are. But if an application is domiciled in one of these foreign adversary countries, then he can declare it. Or if it's 20% owned by a foreign adversary country, then he can declare it, you know, a bannable. And then there's a third category that's really spooky and concerning to me. And that is, if he deems that they are under the control of somebody from a foreign adversary country. So, you know, I've been called Putin's puppet because I won't agree to send money to Ukraine. Obviously, I'm not Putin's puppet. I mean, you know, I live in Kentucky. I've never met Putin. But somebody could say later that one of these social media platforms, let's say X, the president could say, well, you know, Elon Musk is really under the control or advisement of a foreign country. And so, and we know that because we see all these messages on X that are not friendly to our foreign policy. So we're going to declare them under the control of a foreign adversary. And if that sounds far-fetched, just remember that we're 51 U.S. security and intelligence agents who said that Hunter Biden's laptop had all of the hallmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign.
So right. Nothing sounds far-fetched to us, and our audience is very smart, and I think we feel like we've been lied to repeatedly by our government. I mean, this all comes on the heels of what the House Judiciary Committee and Select Subcommittee just last week issued about this massive government surveillance of Americans' financial data. The FBI and the Department of Homeland Security using this DSAC database to go through financial transactions. So I just find it hilarious that we're concerned about Chinese spying on Americans, and yet we are actively doing that to our own citizens, and we can't point to one instance of China actually spying on America. Like, wouldn't it be great on the floor if there was evidence presented to you guys? Yeah, well, here's the evidence, right? But where's the evidence?
Even in the SCIF, which is where we receive classified information, there was a briefing. And I didn't go to that briefing, but one of my colleagues did, and he pressed them and asked them for one example in a classified setting. and they couldn't give him an example. We have top secret, classification authority in Congress just by virtue of being congressmen. They can tell us anything, and they can't give us one example. So, and by the way, Clayton, I serve on those two committees you mentioned, the Judiciary Committee and the Weaponization Committee. I've been in those hearings. It was actually Jim Jordan and I who discovered that Bank of America was giving financial information to the FBI without a warrant, without any legal process. And, you know, we sent the letter. It was Dan Bishop, myself, and Jim Jordan, who signed that letter, sent it to these banks, and they admitted that they were doing it. And we've had follow-up investigations on that. And, that was another complaint we had about this bill. The problem is you want to protect Americans' privacy and their right to their own data. We have bills for that. And they should apply to all social media platforms. For instance, Warren Davidson, who's now just joined the Weaponization Committee because he has so much knowledge about financial services. He's on the Financial Services Committee. He has a bill called the Fourth Amendment is Not for Sale Act. And we need to pass that because what our government is doing, obviously they're spying on us without a warrant, but if we block that avenue, the big loophole they have is they just go buy the data from these data brokers,
right?
Without a warrant, that data that would otherwise require a warrant. Let me give you an example. Every one of us who has a phone, the phone knows we're breaking the speed limit. They know, every phone company can know when everybody is breaking the speed limit. Should they be able to sell that data to the state police, for instance? I don't think so.
We do know that artificial intelligence companies are paying top dollar right now for data. They're trying to get as much data as they can, and they're reaching out to as many companies as they can. They're paying top dollar for this data, and data brokers are making a lot of money right now on Americans' privacy. And so I just find it amazing that the speed and the rapidity with which Congress moved to ban a Chinese app, what they were claiming is a Chinese app, and yet the servers are in the United States. The CIA uses Amazon Web Services actively to spy on Americans. So will there be some sort of legislation in Congress to stop Amazon from being used for spying on Americans? I just find it so hypocritical.
Well, there's also a piece of software known as Pegasus that fairly well known that our
Israeli
government has. Yeah, Israeli software that's state of the art, can do just about anything on your phone, your camera, your microphone. When I'm on the floor of the House and giving a speech, I have to be 100% certain about what I say. My words could be taken down, or I could be, censured or something, or it just would look bad in a debate. But I want to go one step further here on your show than I felt able to go on the floor of the House. And that is to say, we're in proxy wars, basically, in the Middle East and in Ukraine. And the U.S. government, the State Department, they want to control the propaganda that our citizens see, because citizens call their legislators. They may say, we don't want to fund that war in the Middle East. We don't want to fund that war in Ukraine. And so there's this feedback loop that works in a representative democracy, which is what we have. We have not a pure democracy, but we have representatives who listen to constituents. If you can control what the constituents know about what's going on, for instance, in the war between Israel and Hamas, or in the war between Ukraine and Russia, or even in Yemen, then you can control public sentiment. And I suspect, very strongly, I suspect that our State Department saw this as a threat to the narrative that they want to spoon feed the American people. And because the American people, they do have a say in our government, and they're trying to get in that feedback loop. And they really duped Congress on this. They used, the populist threat of China. And I'm not saying that China is not a threat. I said in my speech, we're wearing suits made in China. We're driving cars with chips that were made in China. We're using phones that are made in China. They're buying our farmland. I'm not saying there is no threat from China, but what they're doing is they're not really addressing any of the threat from China. they're using that as the boogeyman to basically shut down one of the apps where they can't control the algorithms.
Well, I thought what your statement was amazing, and I think you hit on something very, very important here. A couple of things I just want to quickly unpack. We're so concerned about China, and yet CBS, 60 Minutes, just a few weeks ago, did a massive report on the massive amount of illegal Chinese immigrants that are pouring across the U.S. southern border into the United States. We've been covering this story extensively here on our show. Military-age men, almost no luggage at all. There's no women with them. There's no children with them. They're coming from China. So Congress moved very quickly to worry about a social media app, but is not doing anything about the southern border on this very issue of China pouring across our southern border. I just find this, again, another piece of the hypocritical puzzle here. But something you said at the very beginning about the speech, they're concerned about the content on the app. And I think that, to me, is what I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you about that. That, to me, seems the most important piece of this puzzle here, that they don't like what's being posted on TikTok about any of these proxy wars that the American government is trying to back and fund. And we covered this a little bit last night on the show, the number of hashtag Free Palestine posts on TikTok is monumentally larger than the Stand With Israel posts. And of course, you've had the Anti-Defamation League coming out, blasting TikTok, wanting to get it removed, claiming it's one of the greatest threats right now. So that, to me, stood out. Do you think that really we could point to the Israel connection here as a major piece of this?
Well, Clayton, as you know, I'm joining you from the GOP retreat here in West Virginia at the Greenbrier. And our lunchtime speaker is the ambassador from Israel. So, you know, every Republican member of the Congress is going to hear an hour-long speech from the ambassador from Israel here at, you know, at this retreat. And that's our guest speaker. So, that's another way to control the narrative. We're not going to have a Palestinian guest speaker or Lebanese guest speaker, and they don't want it on TikTok. Now, let me say, it could be true that China is biasing the algorithms on TikTok. I'm not saying it's a bastion of free speech. I don't think that there are any social media platforms that are free of bias. The one that comes the closest is X, and that's why I use X, because I know that I'm able to get my message out there unfiltered, and I feel like it's not being tamped down. But it could be true that China lets or even amplifies things that are critical of our government on TikTok. But here's the thing, we have a right to foreign propaganda. I know that sounds bizarre, but the alternative is much worse. If you let the U.S. government let you only hear things that are convenient for the U.S. government. And when I say the U.S. government, I don't mean the elected U.S. government. I mean the State Department. And my friend Dan Bishop, who's an attorney, I yielded him 4 minutes in the debate yesterday because he was able to point this out. There's Supreme Court decisions that say we have the right to access information from overseas.
Right. We already have that. We already have that ability, right? And of course, we know the abuse that that's been leading to with FISA warrants within the FBI, of course, and accessing who falls under this category. And so to kind of get you out of here, Congressman, I know you've got a busy day. The piece of this, the foreign adversary part of this, seems to me the most troublesome, right? It's the fluidity with which the president could add anyone they want to this list. What becomes a foreign adversary? So for those critics who are saying this is not a big deal, this is specifically North Korea and China, nothing to see here, or Iran, nothing to worry about here. But what if you add in Saudi Arabia? What if you start adding in all sorts of different countries and you have no say in it, right?
Right. Or Malou, who's the, you know, I think he's in Argentina, right?
Right.
Maybe you add them as a foreign adversary. There are, and here's the thing. It doesn't, like I said at the beginning of this interview, the way the president can categorize an application or a website is being under control of foreign adversaries. Either they're 20% owned by a foreign adversary country, they are domiciled in a foreign adversary country, or he thinks at his discretion. There's no court. There will be no court ruling. It will be one person, the President of the United States, who thinks that that app is under control of a foreign adversary country, which is a list, by the way, that he gets to make up. There's no Article III judge or jury that's going to say, yeah, we agree with the president on that. He's just gets to make that decision unilaterally. I don't, given the abuse of the FISA program where they've been spying on Americans, giving the false narrative about the Hunter Biden laptop that was supported by our government, giving the censorship that we've seen in our weaponization committee and our judiciary committee of social media platforms and of specific users on social media platforms by the White House. I mean, Joe Biden's people had a portal into Facebook and into Twitter where they could give names of people that they wanted censored, and they got censored or blacklisted or deboosted or shadow banned. I was one of those congressmen that got censored before X was, Twitter was purchased and renamed X by Elon. Given what we've seen, the abuse of all of the authority that the president has or claims he has, why in the world would we give him more authority? Like, why would Republicans give Joe Biden that authority? He's here for at least another year. And why would Democrats give it to Donald Trump? The reality is you're not. The State Department believes that they can control that authority regardless of who the president is, and then they will be able to use this to ban inconvenient information that the American people receive that's counter to the narrative that they're trying to push in all of their overseas operations.
And maybe you'll get some clearer answers today during your lunchtime speaker.
Yes.
Maybe that. But
listen, here to that point, it's all propaganda. Obviously, the ambassador of Israel, when he addresses us today, he's going to try to, what a powerful position to be the keynote speaker at the GOP retreat. We've got all these other things going on, right? We've got illegal immigration at the border. We've got inflation. We just finished half of an omnibus, and we're about to do the second half of the omnibus that's going to spend tens of billions of dollars more than Nancy Pelosi spent. And that's our keynote speaker. I think we need to get our priorities, our keynote speaker is not dealing with any of that. But we need to get our priorities straight here in the GOP and in Congress in general. Let the American people install the software they want. Let them go to the websites they want. Don't give one person the authority to ban websites or to keep American people from seeing what they want to see or interacting. I mean, TikTok's mostly used by Americans to interact with Americans, right? Like, I think the government is just big mad that they can't control the algorithms there. So that's why it happened. And like you said, it happened at a speed we don't usually see here in Congress. This bill didn't exist a week ago. It just came into existence. Boom, it moved at the speed of light through the Committee of Jurisdiction, Energy and Commerce. It was reported out unanimously. It didn't get changed at all. One reasonable change to this would be to put a sunset provision in it. Okay, right. Maybe Thomas Massie isn't right, or maybe they're not right. Maybe this is going to get abused, maybe it's not going to get abused, but let's have it automatically expire in 2 or 3 years, in case it is abused, then we have a chance to fix it. But I think that automatic expiration would also keep them honest. If they know they abuse this, then we'll let it expire. That would be a good thing. Sunset provisions are very wise because it's hard to get anything done in Congress. And once something, the ball starts rolling, it's almost impossible to stop the ball from rolling. So putting a provision in there that this expires, that would have been really a good show of faith that they don't intend to abuse this for the rest of human history.
I'll get you out of here on this, Congressman. Where does this go in the Senate?
Well, the Senate may do their own version of it. I do think the fact that we rallied 65 people to vote against this is somewhat of a success. You know, in the Committee of Jurisdiction, which was Energy and Commerce, there was no dissension. And yesterday they expected to have a debate with nobody opposed. I had to use a parliamentary procedure that's not frequently used, that if you discover that the Republican side and the Democrat side are both in favor of a bill, a third person can walk up to the floor and claim time in opposition. So they thought they were going to have 40 minutes to preen and virtue signal. And I took 20 of their 40 minutes and gave them inconvenient facts and rebutted virtually everything they had. And I think we tripled the number of Republicans who voted against this. We were probably at five and we went to 15 because of that debate. And we had 50 Democrats. The reason I'm telling you all this is we definitely put a scratch on their car. And I don't know if they can sell this car in the Senate now. There's some people who were arguing, oh, we better pass the House bill because the Senate will be even worse. And that, you know, it could end up that this is going to be worse. I don't know.
Well, seems like the state of Kentucky right now is the bulwark against this craziness. So thank you for what you're doing, Congressman, because our audience loves you. We are big fans of you here on Redacted. So keep doing what you're doing and fighting the good fight and try the best you can to enjoy that lunch.
I will. And by the way, Mike Lee and Rand Paul, they're already on top of this over there in the Senate. And I expect they're going to be leading the charge against this and the charge for liberty and freedom. So thanks for covering it, Clayton.
Absolutely. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us here in Redacted. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.